Welcome to Conversations with Doc Martin. This video series focuses on extraordinary people doing extraordinary things. Please don't forget to hit subscribe and click notifications so you don't miss out on our next guest. Today, we're joined by Sean Swarner, a philanthropist, author, and keynote speaker. He's a two-time terminal cancer survivor who's dedicated his life to helping others reach their full potential. Sean created Cancer Climber with his brother in 2001, a nonprofit organization that pays for and travels with cancer survivors to climb Kilimanjaro. Sean's passion for climbing and adventure blossomed after becoming the first cancer survivor to summit Mount Everest. Since then, he's climbed all seven summits and skied to both North and South Poles, making him the first cancer survivor and one of only 56 people in the world to complete the Explorer's Grand Slam. His final trip to complete the Grand Slam was to the North Pole, in which a team followed him and chronicled the experience in a documentary called True North. If that wasn't enough, he's also completed the World Championship Hawaii Ironman as well. Not, you know, busy nearly enough. And last but not least, Sean in 2018 was voted as one of the top eight most inspirational people in history and was the recipient of the Don't Ever Give Up Award presented by the Jimmy V Foundation and ESPN. So Sean, welcome, welcome, welcome to you. Thanks for joining me today.
My pleasure, man. That was quite an intro. I'm sitting there thinking, wow, I want to listen to this guy.
Well, you know, I mean, for all our viewers out there, Sean and I are friends. We met a number of years ago now when we were both training to be coaches. And I'll tell a little story about that a little bit later. But you are truly one of the most inspirational peoples I have ever met. You know, watching your documentary, reading your book, Keep Climbing, which I'll talk about in another video. You know, I was sitting there reading the book and I knew kind of the end of the story, so to speak, because we know each other, and I'm like bawling like a baby and I'm like, wait a minute, what's going on? So let's unpack this a little bit. I know that you've had some kind of recent news that isn't the best news either. So why don't we kind of talk about that, and then let's talk about your background and how you're so inspiring to so many people around the world.
Yeah, absolutely. I know earlier, before we actually started, before we hit record, we were talking about how we were going to bring it up. We're like, yeah, let's just bring it out. Let's just throw it out there and make it happen.
Yeah.
So I'm down in Puerto Rico. My wife's Puerto Rican. Mm-hmm. We're turning her house into an Airbnb. It's three blocks from the beach. If anybody wants to come to Puerto Rico,
I love it. I already told you, I'm there.
Right. So while we were driving across, we live in Colorado. While we were driving across the country to Tampa, Florida, to go visit my 98-year-old grandma, mm-hmm. We did that to be safe, you know, to make sure it was just the two of us quarantined in there driving down. It took us a week and a half, I think, just took our time. I got a phone call from my dermatologist, and she told me that I'd been diagnosed with my third cancer. You know, jokingly, I know the video you're talking about is on Facebook and all my social media platforms, mm-hmm. you know, jokingly, kind of tongue in cheek. I'm like, well, I guess I'm an overachiever. You know, I need to go for one's not enough. I went for two. I had to go for three. But we're trying to schedule the best time to go back home mm-hmm. so we can just do a quick surgery. They don't know how deep it is yet until they get in there.
Right.
And initially I was just, I lost it. I wept.
Absolutely.
Because it just brought back so many traumatic memories from the first two cancers, which I'm sure we'll get into.
Sure.
But the good news is the doctors say, if this is the cancer you're going to get, this is the one that you want to get. So I guess I'm unluckily lucky.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know how much of a fan I am of kind of positive psychology and the happiness literature as you are as well. And, you know, we certainly don't want cancer. That's for damn sure.
Absolutely.
But life is not always full of positivity and happiness. And that's what allows us to actually feel happy is these challenging times in our lives. And look, if there's anybody that's been through challenging times and kind of come out the other end, it's you. And, you know, you've been such an inspiration to me. And kind of before we get into that, let's kind of maybe take a step back. Why don't you share with everybody who may not be familiar with you, kind of the first 18 years of your life and how you fought cancer and the two occurrences and so forth.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things I kind of want to touch back on that you mentioned was, you know, with my current diagnosis, you're right. Sometimes, putting it bluntly, life sucks, mm-hmm. but there's nothing you can do about it. except choose how you want to react.
Absolutely.
So I could have let it hit me, and I'm sure, you know, we'll get into that with my first two cancers.
Yep.
Where I could have sat there and I could have come out on the other side thinking, you know, why me, why me, why me? And felt sorry for myself. I could have felt like the victim, but I chose not to. And everybody has the freedom of choice. That's one of the greatest freedoms that we have.
Yep.
You know, in any situation you're in, you have the choice on how you want to react.
100%.
So, I chose to react to the second one. Obviously, it hit me like a ton of bricks. I cried. Mm-hmm. I got it out, which there's nothing wrong with that. You know, everybody has emotions. We're human beings.
Yep.
Get them out.
Yep.
There's nothing wrong.
Absolutely.
So I kind of learned that from the first two cancers. And this is kind of going back to your question, most previous question.
Sure.
Is, you know, when I was, well, you said my first 18 years, I'm assuming you don't want to talk about the first 9 months before I was born, because my mom and dad got together and then 9 months later came me. So we'll flash forward to being 13 years old.
We'll flash forward. Yeah, let's flash forward.
We don't need those details. At 13, I remember going up for, I was perfectly healthy. I was a normal, I grew up in Ohio, Midwest, outgoing, fun kid.
Yeah,
you know, I played soccer, I played football, I played basketball, I ran cross country, I pole vaulted, I swam, you know, I did everything.
Mm-hmm.
And one day I was playing basketball, just a pickup basketball game, and I could audibly hear something snap in my knee.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of sounded, you know, since Thanksgiving was just passed and Christmas mm-hmm. is coming up, mm-hmm. the holidays are here, you know, it sounds like I was eating like a turkey leg, and you know that the gristle and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
That's okay. Yeah. There you go. That's what my knee sounded like.
Ugh.
And I remember hobbling home from school later that day, and the next morning, every joint in my body was so swollen. I literally looked like the Pillsbury Doughboy. Ugh. You know, I felt like a troll. I had to waddle around. I wasn't myself.
Mm-hmm.
So my mom and dad took me to the local hospital where I was born and raised in Willard, Ohio, population mm-hmm. of 5,000 people. And initially they thought I had pneumonia. And as you already know, it was cancer. So you, mm-hmm. you can't cure cancer by sucking on a nebulizer.
Right.
So they took me to Columbus, Ohio,
right.
where they started doing more tests. And then that's when they diagnosed me as a 13-year-old with advanced stage 4 Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Mm-hmm.
And the crazy thing is they told my parents, hey, your firstborn son now has 3 months to live. So
that's absolutely crazy. And it, you know, when I was watching True North again last night, what really struck me was something your dad said. And he said, you know, that's the worst news you ever want to get. But the last thing we're going to accept, I'm paraphrasing, of course, is that your child might pass, because they're going to end up picking up that from you. And so,
right.
you know, you, him and your mom said, be like, no, we're getting through this and we're going to plow through. So.
Yeah, absolutely. It wasn't, hey, if this happens, we're going to do that. We're like, look, this is what we're going to do.
Exactly.
Like, we're not even going to think about dying.
Yep.
One of the reasons they did that was because my step grandmother on my mom's side passed away 3 months beforehand from cancer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And no blood relation at all.
Right.
And they didn't want me to associate being sick, having cancer, with mm-hmm. death.
Sure.
So initially they didn't even tell me. They just said, Sean, you're sick. You know, you're in the hospital, but this is what we're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And which also makes me wonder why in society now are we, and doctors still do this, because I have friends, you know, everywhere mm-hmm. around the world, and all of them, most of them do the same thing. They're like, you have cancer, and this is what we're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and by the way, it's treatable. How about turning that around and telling people, hey, you have a condition, it's treatable, and this is what we're going to do, and oh, by the way, it's cancer. Because once you hear that C word, you check out. If you just turn it around and say, hey, this is what's going to happen, this is what we're going to do, these are the options, and oh, by the way, this is your diagnosis.
Huh. That's really interesting. I never thought of it that way before. I mean, I've thought of life challenges that way. I've never thought of a medical diagnosis that way. And it's kind of interesting because, you know, as many of the folk know, as you do, I'm a dentist and I work for a clinical education company. And actually, that's how we train our dentists to kind of treatment plan in a different way. It's like, here's your condition. Here's what's going to happen if we don't do anything about it. I mean, it's dentistry, not cancer. And, you know, what do you think? And so it's a very similar idea, which is like, okay, here's what's going on. Here's what we're going to do about it. Oh, by the way, it's called this. So, exactly. So the whole idea of the label is, you're right. I mean, the minute people hear the C word, it's a whole different.
They check out.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
So totally. That's what they did. They protected me from it. And yeah. I'm sure for a good reason, you know, because a 13-year-old is very malleable and sure. malleable. And, you know, my brain was just focused on being normal.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I thought, okay, it's no big deal. Let's get it done with. What do we have to do?
Sure.
So
sure.
that's how I went into it.
Yeah.
And then it was a little bit different the second time when I was going in for a checkup for the first cancer. I was older, so I was almost 16.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going for a checkup, and in one day they found a tumor on an X-ray. They did a needle biopsy where they took a needle about this big and slid it past my ribs to aspirate part of the tumor.
Mm-hmm.
So they found a tumor on an X-ray, did a needle biopsy. They took out another lymph node. They put in a Hickman catheter, which is a permanent IV, essentially. Mm-hmm. They did a thoracotomy where they cracked open my ribs, removed the tumor, put in a drainage tube, and started chemotherapy in less than one day.
Oof.
So this time around, they diagnosed me with a type of cancer that affects 3 out of 1 million people with a prognosis of 6%. So if you have 100 people with this cancer, 94 die. I'm actually the only person in the world to have ever had Hodgkin's and Askin's sarcoma. And I did some math, and the chances of me surviving both of these illnesses is equivalent to winning the lottery 4 times in a row with the same numbers.
That's insane. I mean, I can't even like put 2 and 2 together in my brain thinking about Martin as a 16-year-old. To forget about getting that diagnosis, but as a secondary cancer diagnosis, I can't even imagine that. Like, do you recall? I mean, obviously, I'm assuming here. You know what they say about people assume, but I'm assuming here that some of it was a blur, and some of it you remember. Do you remember at all? Kind of like what some of your thoughts were when that day was happening, when they were doing all these things to you at once, like. What was that like?
I absolutely remember that. And I remember being in the recovery room after they did the needle biopsy,
you
know, because they wanted to see what it was first. And they did a wet reading on everything. So immediate results. And I remember the doctor coming into the recovery room and my mom and dad going outside.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, 16 years old, as a 16-year-old, you're nosy. You want to know,
right.
I know they're talking about me.
Right.
So I grabbed my little buddy, my IV pole, and I kind of waddled over there and just listened in. My dad was having the chit-chat, the casual chit-chat. Hey, how's your day? My mom was like, is it cancer or not?
Right.
You know, she jumped right in there. And
she's like, tell me what.
Yeah, she's like, I need to take care of my little baby.
Yeah.
And the doctor said it was cancer. And I remember distinctly, because that's all I needed to hear. And I grabbed my little buddy, I waddled back to the bed, and I buried my face in the pillow and cried. Because I initially thought to myself, oh God, here we go again.
Sure.
I was just starting to come to some semblance of normalcy. And now all of a sudden I have to do this again. My life's going to go on pause. I'm going to lose my friends. I'm going to lose my hair.
Yeah.
And when I was 13, I remember being 60 pounds overweight on my hands and knees, bald from head to toe, pulling chunks of hair out of the drain, just weeping. And I also remember thinking about what my friends were doing that same day when I was getting ready for school. You know, like I said, I just described myself. I thought, okay, well, Jerry, across the street, 2 houses down, he's getting ready for school with a completely different perspective.
Yeah.
He's worried about hairstyles. He's worried about being popular. He's worried about the Reebok pump. It was probably like 29, 30, 31. Perfect pump. I'm on the bottom of the shower floor contemplating life as a 13-year-old. You know, all I wanted to do was be normal.
Yeah.
So the second time around, I remember thinking to myself, well, God, here we go again.
Mm-hmm.
So that lasted for a while. And then believe it or not, when I went in for the treatments, the second time I had 3 months of intense chemo, 1 month of intense radiation, and then 10 more months of chemotherapy.
Mm-hmm.
And every time I was in the hospital, because the treatments were so harsh, they knocked me out. So when I was 16 years old, I was placed in a medically induced coma for nearly a year. I don't remember most of it, you know, but what's crazy is, you know, everywhere I go now, I do my best to visit hospitals and share my survivorship story with the patients.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And even when you're in a coma, your brain's still recording information.
Sure.
So I'll be somewhere and I'll smell saline solution And all of a sudden, bam, I'll get this memory that just comes flooding back. And I look at somebody like, I got to go.
Wow. So it's been stated that smell is one of our most potent memory joggers there is. And so to have that visceral experience, that emotional reaction to a smell without even necessarily the associated memory, it's the emotional memory while you're there to help other fellow human beings is, you know, so many people might do that once and then run the other way, but that's not what you've done. You've, you know, in that moment in time, as you describe, it's like, look, I got to go, but you keep coming back. You keep coming back for people, which is just one of the most inspiring things about you. And so I know, so you were in the coma and then obviously you came out of that coma, obviously. And yeah, then
unless I'm still there, this is all a dream.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm kidding.
No, well, we would certainly hope not. That's for sure.
Yeah. And you know, we're not going to go into the Matrix.
Yeah. I mean, look, we're laughing about this now, but I think that's kind of the point. That's, you know, one of the reasons why I kind of gravitated to you the minute we met, and one of the huge reasons why you're on with us today. And thank you again. It's because of your outlook, and it's because of the fact that you don't. I mean, you go through and you go through the emotions as we should do as human beings and be vulnerable and cry when stuff happens, but you always end up picking yourself up and kind of moving forward from there to help other people. And that's what you've dedicated your life to do. And so, you know, after you ended up coming out of that second round, you know, talk to us about how it ended up morphing today in terms of dedicating your life to helping others, which you do with such grace.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, I'm stumbling over my words. I'm also a professional keynote speaker, and I'm having a hard time getting them out. I appreciate that. And, you know, it does mean a lot knowing that my life is helping other people, because I see life differently. Mm-hmm. After high school, I went to college. I turned into Belushi from Animal House. Mm-hmm. I had a $100,000 party. I had a fantastic time.
Right.
Went to grad school. And while I was working on my master's and my doctorate in counseling psychology, I wanted to be a psycho-oncologist, a psychologist for cancer patients. And that was the first time I realized that my whole life I was dragging around this bag and the bag of issues. Mm-hmm. Not once did I have the time, or did I take the time, I should say, not once did I take the time to look in the mirror and ask myself, who are you? What do you want? And that's when I realized I still had a bunch of baggage from the two cancers, and I couldn't help anybody else until I helped myself.
Sure. Absolutely.
So then I realized, okay, well, I've been given a gift of the mind-body connection, because everything I've seen and everything I've believed has come to fruition. Obviously, it's not like I'm going to go sit in the corner and wish and pray and hope things happen. No, I'm putting forth the effort.
Yeah.
But I realized that because of that connection, you know, I could make a lot of things and a lot of tremendous things happen. And I wanted to reach back into the cancer community, which now seems like it's a global epidemic. It's like the whole world knows somebody touched by cancer.
Yeah.
And I wanted to be the first cancer survivor to climb Mount Everest. I thought, what better platform to scream hope than literally the highest platform in the world?
Yeah.
But I did that when I was 27. And then I went and climbed, as you mentioned in the intro, climbed the highest mountain on every continent, skied to both poles, Hawaii, Ironman. But one of the things that really keeps me grounded is on Everest, I took a flag that was about this big that had names of people touched by cancer. And Everest was the first mountain I climbed. And if anybody's thinking of climbing Everest, I do not recommend starting with Everest. Start with something a little smaller. So I was
good advice. Thank you for that. I'll make a note. Yeah.
But I take a group up Kilimanjaro every year as a fundraiser for my cancer charity. So anybody can start with that.
Yeah.
And our success rate is 98% as opposed to the normal 48%. We do things differently.
Oh, that's cool.
So I started with Everest with the flag of names of people touched by cancer. And on the bottom of every flag, I did that for all the seven summits as well. It always said, dedicated to all those affected by cancer in this small world, keep climbing. Mm-hmm. So then it kind of culminated at the North Pole, which was the last of the Explorer's Grand Slam, yeah. As you mentioned, the seven summits and the two poles.
Yeah.
And that was completely emotional as well. I just want to continue pushing myself and continue showing people that limitations are in the mind, and limitations are only what you believe them to be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And people need to realize that, you know, you are your greatest cheerleader. You are your best asset, but you're also your worst enemy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, in my own coaching practice, both for spirit education and as well as privately, you know, it doesn't matter who you are, where you are, what you do in life. We all have this inner talk track that really guides our interactions. And I told you I was going to tell you a story about you, and I was going to do it on camera. And
I'm kind of nervous about this.
This is when I knew we were going to be friends. And this is when I knew truly and really there were two, come to think of it, that I truly understood what an amazing human being you are. So we're sitting there, it was like day two of course number two, you know, we called them mods. And you and I kind of talked a little bit the day before, because you're such a kind of chill guy. And you were all interested in me. You were like, oh, what do you do, et cetera. Oh, I'm a speaker too, da 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 da. And then I shared with you that I was going to speak at this keynote address and talk about my friend who climbed Mount Everest. And you're like, oh, that's kind of cool. It's kind of a club. I did that too. I'm like, oh, really? Like, I know two people that climbed Mount Everest. That's wild. So we're chit-chatting. And then the next morning, you sit down next to me and you go, hey, I got a gift for you. And you were like so nonchalant about it. And like, picture this. We're seated and you're on my left. I'll never forget this. And you were kind of looking at me, but kind of not. And you're like, I brought you a copy of my book. I said, oh, that's very kind of you. But then you like slap me across the face and you go, you know why? He goes, I want you to go ahead and read this because you've been through enough in your life. The only person that's really holding you back is yourself. And I just want you to believe that. And then you just kind of stopped. And I didn't even know what to say at the time. And I was like, holy smokes. And so whenever I have a challenging time in my life, it's like, I always think of you, honest to goodness. Because I think to myself, well, shoot, if Sean's been through what Sean's been through and come out the other end, who the heck am I to be complaining about X, Y, or Z? And so the gifts you've given to the world and the hope that you've brought to the world and with all the cancer patients and your climbing, it's amazing. And I'm going to save the second story for a second segment, but I want to thank you for that. Because it really made a significant impact on my life, and
well, I had no idea, and I'm deeply touched by that. So yeah. I appreciate you sharing.
Yeah,
you know, but never, and I say this with utmost respect. Never compare yourself to someone else.
True, absolutely, you know, absolutely.
Your struggle, anybody else's struggle, is completely unique to them. You know,
true.
People say. They call me all the time, and I ask them, hey, how you doing? Oh, you know, I'm kind of down. I'm kind of sick. I got a cold. And all of a sudden they say, well, look who I'm talking to.
But yeah.
Your Everest is different than my Everest. My Everest was literally Mount Everest. You know, somebody else's Everest could be walking around the block.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's real to every single person who has issues.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's one of the reasons why. You kind of hit the nail on the head. That's one of the reasons why I'm even doing this YouTube thing. Because, you know, however many people meaning myself and my wonderful guests can touch, that's a good day. Because it's not necessarily for the point of comparison, but for the point of inspiration and for the point of hope and kind of being able to lift us up to a place that brings us greater levels of happiness, contentment, and joy. And
absolutely. So that's beautiful.
Yeah, it's and that's really the whole point of this. I mean, you know, whether you know, 200, 2,000, or 2 million people see this, it at the end of the day, and I know I've heard you say this too, like if you can impact like even one person, it makes it worthwhile, right? So
absolutely.
So, you know, tell us a little bit about kind of where you are now, because our next segment that we'll get to, we're gonna kind of dig deeper into like what you're doing and kind of you and I talk, you know, kind of coach talk and have a good time there to kind of help people with specific skills and just kind of the whole topic of mindset. But kind of share with everybody kind of you're a professional speaker now and you have the Kilimanjaro trip and you you have dedicated your life to helping others. So talk to us a little bit about kind of what you're engaged with, because you're engaged with a number of things. So
yeah, absolutely. So where do I even start with this? Because everyone always asks, well, what do you do? And I say, well, I'm a yeah, speaker, I'm a climber, I'm an author, I'm an adventurer, and I run a nonprofit for kids with cancer.
Right.
I'm like, oh yeah, you're not busy. Wow. I would say that the biggest thing I'm working on right now is a program. Mm-hmm. But you know, I also signed another contract to write another book. I'll send you a new copy.
Okay.
We're playing with the title right now.
Okay.
But I think it's called, it's the 7 Summits to Success. My plan is to have 7 different books.
Love it.
And then put them together, like smaller books,
mm-hmm.
but kind of have an emotional, fun story going through there. And then like the last 5%, like the dummies how-to guide.
Yes.
Like, this is what Sean did. And these are the embedded stories within, or these are the embedded lessons in the story.
Love it.
So it's going to be 7 Summits to Success, How to Climb Your Own Everest.
Love it.
So we're pretty excited about that. The film, as you said, came out a couple years ago. I'm working mm-hmm. on working with the Survivors Net. They want mm-hmm. me to do a couple bookends on movies for them, like intro and an outro. Keynote speaking. I'm doing a lot of online stuff now because mm-hmm. of the vid.
Yes.
And in-person stuff hopefully will pick up soon. I love doing keynote presentations.
Absolutely.
For very large corporations. So mm-hmm. that's always been a blast.
Absolutely.
But the biggest thing too, two big things. One is the summit challenge, mm-hmm. which I think we'll get into a little bit later.
Mm-hmm.
But then the second one is I'm still looking for people every year to go up Kilimanjaro. Like I said, I've been up Kilimanjaro now 20 times.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife, I got married mm-hmm. last year, 2 years ago now. So it'll be 2 years coming up. She actually has an organization called, or a company called Origins Accessories,
mm-hmm.
which has women's accessories.
Mm-hmm.
And I've learned more about women's accessories in the past 6 months than I thought I would my entire life. So I can tell you what a difference between a bangle and a bracelet, whatever. But with each purchase, it supports an orphanage in Africa next at the base of Mount Kilimanjaro. So this year, she actually fed, I want to say, almost 100 orphans for mm-hmm. an entire year
mm-hmm.
with her sales.
That's incredible.
Just constantly giving back and helping people understand that, you know, the more you give, the more you get. The more you help people, the more difference you make in the world, the better.
Absolutely.
And I remember being on a plane flying to, I was connecting in Hong Kong. So I was giving a presentation in Mumbai
mm-hmm.
in India.
Mm-hmm.
And I got bumped up to first because of all my miles. You know, I have over a million on American.
Sure.
And the guy I was sitting next to, he took that flight from Dallas to Hong Kong once every other week.
Oof.
So he was multi-millionaire, if not billionaire. You know, I don't know why he wasn't flying; he was taking his own plane.
Right.
But we were just talking back and forth, and I kept asking him questions. You know, how are your kids doing? Are your family? Mm-hmm. I got to know him pretty well.
Right.
And he told me, well, you know, I miss my kids' first words. I missed him walking. I missed him, you know, hitting off a tee for t-ball. And he kept going off, and I was like, okay, well, how much money do you need?
Yep.
You know, you're set. He's like, well, it's just what I do. I'm like, well, what about your family?
Yeah.
You know, so I finally asked him a question. I was like, have you fulfilled your life's purpose?
Mm.
And this is kind of going back to your original question.
Mm-hmm.
You know, have you fulfilled your life's purpose? And I immediately followed up and I asked him, are you still alive?
Wow.
So then he stopped. And then when we landed, he looked at me and he goes, you convinced me to quit my job. This is my last trip to Hong Kong. I'll spend the rest of my time with my family.
Wow. That's amazing.
So I don't know if that's good. I don't know if he lost, you know, his 3 houses or whatever, but he's spending more time with his family.
Well, you got to assume if he's been doing that trip every other week that he's probably smart enough to figure out whether
I'm sure.
And retire or not.
Yeah.
So, well, I think that's an amazing story. And you know, our next segment, we're going to kind of go into a little bit more of the mindset stuff. I wanted to kind of have the viewers get to know you just a little bit. Understand your story, realize why you were voted one of the 8 most inspirational people in history, because it's certainly well deserved. And I love your comment around you know, everybody has their own perspective and the whole comparison thing, and it is so true. And I don't know if you've had this experience, and you know, when you end up coaching somebody and you kind of help them work through something. And as we were trained not to get into their bag, as the phrase was, or their issue box, tissue box, you know, there's a couple of different catchy ways to do it. It does give you that perspective, right? It gives you that perspective relative to, you know, everybody's going through their own stuff. And it doesn't matter what that stuff is, because for everybody, as you said, that's their personal Everest. And so,
absolutely.
You know, it's, you know, as we kind of wrap up our first segment here, any additional thoughts that you have for people about kind of overcoming their own personal Everest before we go into our next segment next time?
I do. And I think I learned it from my parents when I was a little kid and I was swimming. Mm-hmm. And they always taught me, and I talk about this all the time in my keynote presentations, mm-hmm. that I never had to be the best. Mm-hmm. I had to be my best.
Yep.
And I think that really helped, knowing that if I just improve myself tomorrow a little bit better than I was today,
yep.
and then tomorrow, the next day, a little bit more than I was the other day, that utilizing the compound effect, it really makes a tremendous difference in someone's life.
Absolutely.
But if you're constantly comparing yourself to others, you're going to end up going after other people's goals, mm-hmm. as opposed to what you value most.
Absolutely.
And if you're focused on being the best you can be, everything's going to be fine. You're comparing yourself to a standard that you can constantly improve.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love that. What a beautiful way to stop. And a beautiful segue into our time together next time. So Sean, thank you very much for joining us today. I'm going to provide Sean's contact information and information on some of his initiatives below. Please don't forget to subscribe and click the notification button. And lastly, remember that life speaks to you. And if you think it doesn't, you're not listening. Take care, everybody. We'll see you soon.